want to kind of focus on some very few important people who met Heschel at decisive times of their lives. And of course, you were extremely helpful to Heschel, as well as him having an influence on you. So that, you know, that's why I'm interested in some of that background.
Well,
when you came to JTS, is that the
To JTS from Yeshiva University.
Hmm.
I went to Yeshiva from 1941-1945, and I was very young when I started Yeshiva.
Hmm.
I was 14 and a half, and I started, my parents brought me up in a pair of knickers. I went through all of the confusions of adolescence, post-adolescence, some of the conflicts. My father wanted me to be a physician because we had lived through the Depression, which was pretty frightening for us. We didn't know where the next day's food was going to come from sometimes.
You're living in New York, or your family was living in New York?
No,
oh, Baltimore.
Maryland.
I see.
Yeah. And my father's favorite line was, "My son, I want you should be a doctor, because there will always be sick people and you'll always make a living." And my mother wanted me to become a rabbi. Part of that was that her father never believed that she was orthodox enough, religious enough. She was going to prove to him that she not only was religious, but she was going to produce an Orthodox rabbi.
Yeah, that's so, where were they from?
They were from Ukraine.
I see.
The, Kiev Gubernia, the province of Kiev.
Yes.
They came from two small Jewish villages. So, my point in describing that conflict was that when I went through Yeshiva, I went through a whole series of conflicts trying to resolve in my mind what I wanted to do with myself. Aside from the whole question of adolescent identity, which is a turbulent time. I developed a very strong interest in writing. While I was at Yeshiva, I became the editor of the school newspaper. Worked on it from my first year to my last year. In fact, I started the campaign for the building of what then became the Albert Einstein Medical School.
Really? Interesting.
And I had a self-interest in that because when I finished with my Bachelor of Science degree at Yeshiva, sit down here, I'll when I finished my Bachelor of Science degree, I wanted to go to medical school. And in those days, there were numerous clauses, these discriminatory clauses.
Yes, yes.
And I couldn't get into Johns Hopkins, University of Maryland, because they told us outright that the quota was filled for Jews, blacks, Italians.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was finally admitted for one day. Went to Rutgers Medical School, and I walked in the cadaver room, and I decided instantly that I was not going to be a doctor. I simply, well, I was very good in biology in college, but the notion of cutting up people somehow became traumatic for me. I turned around and walked out. It was the end of my medical education.
Really? So you didn't stay there for a few more days?
No.
Goodness.
I was terrified.
Yes.
And seeing dead faces, gray and grim. And, I had no problem with animals. So when I was in the laboratories in Yeshiva, I was very good in anatomy and all that. Anyway, the point is, when I left the seminary, when I left Yeshiva, I was in a state of considerable confusion. I was not sure that I wanted to be a rabbi. They had brought in European rabbi, Rosh Hashiva, and it kind of be like a religious KGB. My name is Bill Randall, the rooms for the kids. It became oppressive for me.
At Yeshiva University in the dormitory.
Yeah. His name was Rabbi Lessin, and he was called the Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual advisor.
Wow.
But he had no sense of America or American kids. Anyway, I left Yeshiva, both for reasons of many unresolved religious problems and my own adolescent identity problems, because I graduated Yeshiva when I was about 18, mm-hmm. 18 and a half. And so here I had this Bachelor of Science degree. I knew I didn't want to go to medical school. So I took off a year and I worked as an assistant editor to quite extraordinary editor, Mayor Grossman, who was a Zionist revisionist in those mm-hmm. days. Put out a newsletter called Trend of Events.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was wonderful journeyman's work. I learned a great deal about editing and writing from him and Jewish reality.
You were Zionist, or was it just the kind of
well, I was,
being in the world that was interesting to you?
I guess I never thought of Zionism as an ideology. I never really studied it. It was being a religious Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow Israel, Jerusalem,
yes.
My earliest experiences at home was that Friday afternoon we would always put money in the blue and white pushka, the JNF box,
yes.
for Shabbos.
Yeah.
And we did that since we were 3 years old or so. Mm. So that was our attachment to Israel, blue and white box. So I had spent a year with Mayor Grossman. I ended up living in a room on 9th Avenue and 42nd Street.
Mm.
It turned out with a German couple, and they terrified me. The guy was a drunk. He used to beat his wife every night with his crutches. Terrible. Couldn't wait to get out of there. One day I was walking down Broadway and I ran into Harold Schulweis, a classmate of Yeshiva. And I said, where are you going? He says, I'm going to the seminary to take an exam. Hmm. So he had been a philosophy major at Yeshiva.
Hmm.
And I had majored in history, literature. In addition to my BS, and it was from my sub-majors. So I said, that sounds interesting. He also, a young guy who had studied philosophy, and he couldn't get a job teaching philosophy
yes.
anywhere. So we both had the need to sort ourselves out.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was a cultural phenomenon of that generation.
Hmm.
The whole generation of boys who came out of Yeshiva had an Orthodox background.
Yes.
Who were rebelling against their Orthodoxy.
Uh-huh.
Who did not want to leave Jewish life, but wanted to find a conceptual way, an intellectual mm-hmm. way, of remaining deeply Jewish, but somehow could not accommodate to rigid, authoritarian,
yes.
oppressive forms of religion.
And that's the way it was at Yeshiva University?
Well, in my years it was.
Yeah.
There was always a lot of pressure coming from right-wing ultra-Orthodox to make the place more traditional.
Mm-hmm.
The upshot of it was that Hal and I went into the seminary right off the street, and we took the exams, we passed, and we went to school.
Mm.
And that's how we became conservative rabbis.
You went to the rabbinical school? Is that what it was?
School.
Yes.
The Jewish Theological Seminary. Also, there was a great need to deepen our Jewish knowledge, Jewish education. because at yeshiva, our preoccupation was with the Talmud. We were quite proficient in Talmudic studies. Very little Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Almost no history. Mm-hmm. History was always incidental. So we went, so came to the seminary, and with these complex motivations, certainly for myself, I think for Al Schulweis and a large number of other people. Harold Weisberg, who since passed away, was a brilliant philosopher. Mm-hmm. Lloyd Tenenbaum, who became a conservative rabbi and a writer. The upshot of it was that I developed a very great interest in Jewish history under Professor Alexander Marx. I began working on some studies on the interaction of Judaism and Christianity in the intertestamental period. I got my first feeling about Jewish-Christian relations. But I was quite in a state of turmoil because of my youth. I was the youngest kid in my class. I was intellectually advanced and emotionally adolescent.
Mm-hmm. I had this asked, Alexander Marx had come recently from Europe.
Now, Marx had been there for many years.
He came
from Germany.
Yes.
He was a great Jewish historian who was a co-author with Max Margulies, a major history book called History of the Jewish People by Marx and Margulies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a classic text.
Mm-hmm.
Still used this
yeah.
day. Great methodical historian. I did my master's under him.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, though, I was in a state of considerable turmoil, going through my adolescence, trying to sort myself out as a Jew, reacting still against Yeshiva University's rigidity for me, and still maintaining an interest in writing.
Mm-hmm.
While all of this was going on, I guess it was in my senior year. My father, who had been ill, had developed a series of heart attacks, coronary thrombosis. He had three thrombosis attacks, one after the other. And my parents had a small kind of general store in South Baltimore, in a poor multi-ethnic neighborhood, and my mother, who was one of these characteristic European Jewish women, kind of Rock of Gibraltar types,
mm-hmm.
who ran the store,
mm-hmm.
took care of my father, raised the children, made sure she did our homework with us every night,
mm-hmm.
every morning there was a glass of freshly squeezed orange juice
mm-hmm.
at 6 o'clock, and
mm-hmm.
besides our bed. She was a Jewish mother, in the best sense of the term. And she really ran our lives, my mother was running the store at this time. My brother had left, he had been in the army and came out. Became a radio announcer in Virginia. Only my younger sister was left, Seema, to stay at home with my mother. And the illness of my father and his heart attacks created a tremendous emotional crisis for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been handling this sort of thing for years.
Yeah.
She now was overwhelmed. And on this particular day, I've been a student of Heschel's in my last year. Heschel was not a very good teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I think, as I learned later on, the reason for it is that he was brought over to the United States to the Reform Seminary in Cincinnati, where he was a fish out of water. And he couldn't live in what was far too secular a world for him. I mean, after all, he was a pietist, he was a chassid.
Yeah.
And he needed an environment in which to function.
Couldn't get kosher food.
Couldn't get kosher food. He was attacked by students.
Yeah.
Who saw him as an alien, as a foreigner in their midst. And he was quite miserable. So the seminary, Finkelstein invited him to come to the seminary. And I think I had him in the year in which he was still going through his transition, leaving HUC, coming to the Jewish Theological Seminary. And himself was in a state of, I think, deep upset.
Yes.
He was just finding himself as a professor. I think he was really quite insecure.
How could you tell? Could you tell at the time, or at least retrospectively, were there things that you remembered?
You could tell in his lecture.
Ah.
Lecture.
How so?
Was very intense and almost very nervous. He became very uncomfortable when questions were asked.
Oh.
Very defensive. And I think that caused me to back off. I just had the feeling of inability to really communicate deeply with him.
Do you remember what he was teaching?
Yeah, I was teaching Jewish philosophy and mysticism.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this was what year? 40?
This was 1949, 1950.
I see. Because he rarely had a chance to teach philosophy at JTS,
well,
as far as
one,
I know.
We had this one class.
I see.
Any event, you know, but I felt some kind of attachment to him, which I... something real mystical, almost like a, something very fatherly about him. And he represented the old world of my parents.
Did he have a beard by then?
Yeah.
Kind of
small
little,
beard.
Yeah. Kind of black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was quite young then.
Yeah.
His 40s.
Yeah.
Well, this particular episode was that on a day after I'd come out of his class, I received a telephone call from my mother. My father had just had another heart attack. And she was beside herself. And she was just falling apart emotionally. And I was afflicted with terrible guilt that I was in New York, and she and my younger sister were home to take care of him, take care of the business. So I got on an elevator in the Teachers Institute building, and it was a packed elevator, and Heschel was standing right beside me, and he looked at me and he said, Mark, is anything wrong? I said, well, I've got some family problems. He said, I can see that you are in trouble. I want you to come up to my office with me. So we rode upstairs, the sixth floor. I came into his office. He asked me to sit down. And he asked me what was going on. So I told him. We sat together for about 2 hours, and I described in great detail. It was practically the story of my life, and what my anxieties were, and I felt that my father was going to die. I felt terribly guilty staying in New York. I felt my mother was falling apart. No one there ready to take care of her, to help her through the transition. Nashville, picked up the phone and called my mother in Baltimore.
Hmm, right in front of you.
Huh. And my mother knew of Heschel.
Yes.
She knew that he was a sage, a great teacher. I mean, she had been aware of him because she used to read about him in the Yiddish press.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, there were occasionally stories about him and his Hasidic dynasty, the Alter Rebbe.
Yes.
So, I mean, she knew of him, and I used to talk about him when I came to Baltimore for family visits.
Yeah.
And he called her to give her nechama, to give her consolation.
Yeah.
And talked about a priest who was there as a student, and that he's going to pray for my father's welfare and recovery. And if there was anything that he could do, she should feel free to call him.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, that's where the bonding began.
Yes. What language did they speak in?
Yiddish.
Really? And he spoke with you in
Yiddish
English?
Yiddish and some English. My spoke, well, yeah, I spoke with me almost entirely in English, but
yes.
Yiddish was my mother tongue as
yes.
a child in Baltimore. We spoke it at home often. I mean, I read Yiddish newspapers to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
That was overwhelming for me. That he would take the time off for 2 hours out of his kind of schedule. And then to just spontaneously call my mother to console her and give her support. That just... And I began developing this kind of awe and reverence.
Yes, yes.
Person. In any case,
you don't mind interrupting, just do you, had you heard, Heschel speak Yiddish subsequently to that conversation with your mother? Just wondering if there was anything specific about the way he spoke.
No, well, it was,
cause he had,
there was this kind of warmth
and
a kind of caring, loving caring.
Yeah.
And, you know, this feeling is as if, you know, the whole of Jewish life was embracing my mother. And, you know, he asked her in her traditional ways, be strong, be strong, be strong. So, when I, my father passed away 5 years later, I was ordained in June 1950. Wolf and I were classmates, and that's where we developed our very close relationship. And also Wolf and I, he had also a Jewish mother, a very powerful Jewish mother. So the when I left the seminary, decided that I wanted to go back to Baltimore, close to my mother. But I also had a was an obsession to write a novel about my childhood experiences in Baltimore, and the whole culture of these poor farm families from the South and Southern Maryland. Who came into urban settings and were virtually destroyed by urbanization, mechanization. And it was kind of a social protest novel. So while I was in Baltimore that year, I taught Hebrew school at Temple Beth El with Rabbi Jacob Agus, who was a dear friend. And I spent that year writing a novel. Part of the time I went off the countryside in western Maryland in a shack where I spent 3 or 4 months in the summer working on a novel. But I completed the novel in Baltimore.
Wonderful.
I never published it.
Really?
Because I somehow never felt it was good enough. I've looked at it occasionally.
Yeah, what, I was going to say, what do you think of it now?
Not bad.
Yeah, well, gee.
I'll get around to it when I finish my next book.
Yeah.
I'll get around to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really was very fresh.
Very interesting.
Very fresh imagery of that life. And
was it about Jewish life as well or not?
No, it was interestingly. Yeah. It had to do with the ethnic Christians we live
Isn't
with.
Isn't that interesting?
Poles, Italians, Germans, Irish. And my mother was a kind of a Jewish mother to those families.
I see.
She had this enormous caring about them.
Hmm.
And we used to sustain them when they didn't have any money.
So there wasn't any kind of ethnic hatred?
Yeah, it was anti-Semitism.
It was.
But it was part
of the people who would carry it.
Part of the ambiguity of living there was that we were both the best friends, and there were some in Sukkot who would throw bags of mud into our sukkah and cry out. My father's name was Abraham. I'm Abi, Jew baby. But that was...
Yes, it's like the old country.
Yeah. But my closest friends were Irish and Italian kids. I played baseball with them. I went down to Cherry Hill to pick apples and Georgia. My point, transition though, is that I finished the novel. I did what I could to help my mother out. I helped buy a small house for her, which was some income. And my father died, I moved her to that house. Mm. And she was able to sustain herself. I came back to New York, and I did a brief stint with Time Magazine.
Mm.
I'd been a consultant for their religion department,
a
religion editor for some time. In fact, I was working with them at one point on a cover story on Heschel.
Really? Who was that?
Auchincloss, Douglas Auchincloss.
Yeah, famous name.
Yeah. It ended up there was a full page and a half treatment of Heschel in Time. He just got beat out by some other news event.
Yes.
But it was supposed to be a cover story.
What year was that approximately?
1950, 51.
I'd say right after the Earth of the Lord or the Sabbath.
Yeah, it's 51.
Yeah.
Then I worked for a publisher. Time Magazine became crazy for me. The pressure of the deadlines. Business that I would have to work on Shabbos and Yom Tov.
Did you go down there in the office? Is that where you worked?
Yeah.
I see.
I worked with Auchincloss.
So that was your job? It was a full-time job?
Yeah.
I see. Rather than being a rabbi.
Yeah, I took a weekend, some weekend congregation time. But that was earlier, though. Let's see. That was still while I was at the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
Before I was ordained, I helped organize weekend congregations in Mayopac, New York.
Mm.
And I used to go there for the Sabbath and holidays. Part was the education of the children there. First rabbi they had, and to help put together a community. Also, I wanted the income so I'd be free to write during the week. Most of my colleagues taught Hebrew school every afternoon.
I see, yes.
During the living, and I wanted those afternoons free.
Right,
so
right.
I could do some writing.
Hmm.
When I was working for Henry Schumann in 52, 51, 52. Heschel called me one day and said, I'd like to talk to you. I got a project I'm working on. I need your advice. So I came up to his study, and there on his desk were spread out all these papers.
Mm.
And he had pages.